the orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment. Thursday night on BBC Radio 3 from 7:30.
This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's 1 o'clock, time for the news now, read by John Shea.
Severe weather is causing problems for millions of people across the UK on what is usually the busiest weekend before Christmas. Heathrow and Gatwick airports have closed their runways. Heavy snowfall has brought road traffic to a standstill, particularly in the northwest of England, where hundreds of drivers were stranded on the M6 overnight. Many Premier League football fixtures have been postponed, as well as all League One and Two games. England's acting chief medical officer has played down the seriousness of the spread of winter flu after GPs warned of an imminent crisis. Professor Dame Sally Davis said there was no evidence that the outbreak was worse than usual. The British Medical Association has raised fears that the illness could be more widespread this year because of lower immunisation rates. A senior Liberal Democrat councillor has accused the Communities Secretary, Eric Pickles, and the Housing Minister, Grant Shapps, of behaving like Laurel and Hardy. In a strongly worded letter to the Lib Dem leader, Nick Clegg, Richard Kemp said the Conservative ministers should be reined in for not facing up to the effect of spending cuts on local government jobs and services. Protests are taking place on British high streets today against tycoons and businesses accused of tax avoidance. The group UK Uncut is targeting a number of shops which they say avoid £25 billion of tax a year. The American woman convicted of murdering the British student Meredith Kircher in Italy, Amanda Knox, is back in court for the latest stage of her appeal. She's asking for a review of the forensic evidence used in her trial, including DNA found on the knife allegedly used in the killing. And the weather. Heavy, slow-moving snow will continue to fall across much of southern England, including parts of the Midlands. Elsewhere, there will be some further snow at times, but not as heavy as yesterday. Northern Ireland will be drier and brighter. The news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at just after 1:02.
And it was read by John Shea. Well, now on Radio 3, the early music show, and Lucy Skeeping presents the last in a series of monthly profiles of major Baroque operas.
Welcome to the show. Now, a lovesick frog, some mischievous gods and goddesses, lots of dancing and a host of special effects. A Christmas panto, perhaps? Oh, no, it's not. It's a rather extraordinary piece of music theatre from the 18th century. We're going to be hearing highlights today from a pioneering comic opera by one of the masters of the French Baroque. The title is Platé, and it's by Jean-Philippe Rameau. I'll be exploring its background, its plot, and of course some of its music. And helping me is a great champion of the work, someone who's recorded it twice and staged it on several occasions, the French conductor Marc Minkowski. And I guess the best place to start is right at the beginning with the overture.
Thank you.
The overture to Rameau's comic opera Platé, first given in 1745 and performed there by Les Musiciens du Louvre, directed by Marc Minkowski. Marc has long been a devotee of French Baroque music, reviving a host of little-known gems, some of which have hardly seen the light of day since their very first performances at Versailles. He and his ensemble have been showered with awards, and as you can imagine, with an exhausting schedule that regularly takes him to all corners of the globe, he was pretty hard to pin down. So we were delighted to be able to catch up with him for a chat, even if it was in the rather noisy foyer of a London hotel. He has such a broad knowledge of Baroque opera, so how does he rate this one?
Platé is perfect, because the libretto is absolutely genius. For once, the best libretto in the hands of the best composer produces an incredibly strong effect, and not only a funny effect, also a poetic and sometimes a melancholic effect. And for me, Platé is like Falstaff in the work of Verdi. He's a genius composer, quite old, having fun with something very elaborate. And all of this in the context of a wedding, a young king who's going to marry a very ugly princess for politic reasons. By coincidence, the story is speaking about a creature who thinks she's the most beautiful of the world, while she's too completely ridiculous, and she also thinks that every human being are in love with her. And to present this in such a condition of marriage is absolutely incredible.
Marc Minkowski. The wedding he mentioned, where Platé received its first performance, was between the Dauphin, the son of Louis XV, and his first cousin, the Infanta Maria Theresa of Spain. The Infanta was said to have been rather plain, so an experimental operatic parody about a marriage between a handsome Jupiter and an ugly frogess might well have risked causing offence, or at least a good deal of sniggering behind the ladies' fans. But no, surprisingly, after the premiere, which was given at the Royal Riding Stables at Versailles, Rameau was awarded the equivalent of £2,000 and made a composer in the King's Chamber of Music. He based the opera on a work by Jacques Autreau called Platé or the Jealousy of Juno. The story is told in three acts, along with a prologue, which opens to reveal Thespis, the author, awakening from a drunken sleep. "I will devise a comedy," he tells us, "that will correct the shortcomings of mortals." Folly and Momus agree to join in the fun. They discuss the plot, how Jupiter once cured his wife Juno of jealousy. But they've forgotten the most vital ingredient of all, the character who now arrives on the scene, as Marc Minkowski explains.
Amour, the god of love. They are starting an opera and a story without him. But what's going here? I mean, you are doing a story about human beings and you forget Amour. The music is very sparkling with violins imitating the arrows movement.
"Who dares to undertake a play without me," declares a furious Amour, sung there by Véronique Jean. A dance brings the prologue to a close. Let us sing to Bacchus, to Momus, and to Amour, for without wine and without ecstasy, there is naught but sadness. the gods create un spectacle nouveau, and it was certainly very different from anything the audience would have seen before. Where the old tragedy lyrique of, say, Lully's time were usually set in some pretty pastoral idyll, in Platé we get the complete opposite, a muddy swamp, where the cast of shepherds and shepherdesses might have frolicked in pastel-coloured silks and satins. Here, Rameau gives us a chorus of frogs, and the score is full of noises and effects that imitate nature in all its grubby glory, as Mark Minkowski tells us.
The interesting thing is Rameau uses natural elements from the animals, from the storm, from the wind. You can hear frog sounds. Even from the beginning, you hear something with very strong use of oboes in the low register. It gives us a feeling of a special nasal sound.
And nowhere is this more evident than in the excerpt we're going to hear next. Being very vain, Platé is convinced that everyone who comes near her pond is madly in love with her, including Kithaeron, with whom she immediately begins flirting. It would be good to hear more tender feelings, she coos. But as he shrinks away from her slimy, webbed hands, she can only weep. Oh, cruel one, you laugh. And here the word qua, or why, becomes a comical chorus repeated like a froggy croak. Qua, qua, qua. By the way, Platé is sung by a man, Gilles Ragon, which makes her clumsy, amphibious attempts at feminine wiles even more comical, especially when it comes to the low notes. Ragon as the lovesick Platé and Bernard Delettrez as Kithaeron, trying to back away from her. Part of Rameau's comic opera Platé that we're exploring all through today's programme. So just about everything in this work seems to confront the normal expectations of the time. After all, how many operas by Lully or his contemporaries must the French audiences have sat through that sung praise to the sun, with the obvious allusions to the Sun King himself? Now, only a few decades down the line, Rameau sings of extinguishing the sun's rays in favour of the rain.
Oh,
Véronique Jean, this time in the role of Platé's frog maiden, Clarine. Of course, most symbolic of this topsy-turvy opera is Platé herself.
The principal character, Platé, it's not new in the world of opera, of course. There were transvestite characters in Cavalli, in Monteverdi, in some French comedy opera works before, but not treated to that point, because Platé is the most important character. And Rameau wrote a role for Géliot. He was doing all the important roles, the tragic roles, the prince roles. And to ask this guy to sing a frog, completely nymphomaniac, must have been very special. And who knows how it was. And then the revival in Paris Opera was given to another tenor, probably more a character tenor. But it's interesting to see that the role can be sung by different voices. When you have a masterpiece like this, it can be interpreted in very different ways. It always works.
Mark Minkowski. We now come to what's perhaps Platé's greatest scene. As we've heard, the plot concerns Jupiter, who decides to teach his wife Juno a lesson to cure her of her jealousy. The plan is to send her away to Athens while he proposes to Platé. He'll even go as far as the wedding vows with her. And then Juno will return and save him in the nick of time, realising it's all a joke, and be cured of her jealousy. So Jupiter now throws himself into this unlikely courtship, to the delight of Platé. "The clouds are opening," she sings. "My charming suitor will soon be revealed." But Jupiter's going to have some fun. He goes through a series of transformations, first turning himself into a donkey whose loud brays are echoed in Rameau's witty score. "Quelle métamorphose!" gasps Platé, totally unfazed. Next, he becomes an owl. And Rameau has a lot of fun with this too, launching the orchestra into a series of bird noises. Finally, in a clap of thunder, Jupiter reveals himself in his true shape. "I come to seek naught else but the pleasure of your love," he tells Platé. "How beautiful she is," sings the chorus. "Jupiter is full of sighs for her." It's all rather cruel, and you just know it's going to end in disappointment for poor Platé anyway.
Je sens trop je vois du mouvement, je vois du mouvement, je crois qu'il me découvre mon adorable amant. Je crois qu'il me découvre mon adorable amant. Je n'ose. C'est une épreuve à Sirimo que tu dis est pris par la flamme nouvelle. C'est une épreuve à Sirimo que tu dis est pris par la flamme. Venez, j'y suis fidèle, quelle que
De mes dignes amours, Ne soyez pas plus longtemps avisés. Comptez, comptez sur mon secours. Comptez, comptez sur mon secours. S'éloigne de mes mains la foudre redoutable. Je ne viens point vous alarmer. Jupiter avec vous devenu plus traitable ne s'occupera plus que du plaisir d'aimer. Ne s'occupera plus que du plaisir d'aimer. Seriez-vous insensible à mes tendres feux? Je vous offre des vœux constants. Vous ne répondez rien.
Pardonnez-moi, j'étouffe et je soupire en même temps.
En attendant qu'un dos immense s'apprête, qu'on réjouisse ici la nouvelle conquête. Molus, rassemblez tous vos jeux, que l'allégresse de la peine égale l'excès de mes feux, égale l'excès de mes feux.
Sujet divers que le délire enchaîne à jamais dans ma cour. La gloire en ce
Le Texier as Jupiter making love to Platé in a cruel joke. You're listening to the Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping, and I'm exploring Rameau's comic opera Platé with the help of Mark Minkowski, whose recording we're featuring all through the programme. And I'll let him introduce what's perhaps the opera's most ingenious comic creation, who appears next.
Maybe the most incredible thing in Platé is the philosophic lesson of his character called La Folie. Folie, madness, gives this allegory the power to do anything. And she explains us, in the middle of opera, she stops, like she takes a remote control and stops the film, the DVD on the TV and says, okay, just a moment, you're having a good time, a very funny story, but I explain that this story is only working and is only good because me, madness, folie, I have the power to do anything with music, and because I have stolen the lyre of Apollon, of Apollo, I am able to do anything. This is incredible. This is sort of character very unusual in Baroque era. I mean, it's like a character of musical comedy. I mean, it's such a shock. And the most incredible shock, she makes a number to say, okay, now I'm going to tell you I can sing tragedy on a very ridiculous, fast and amusing music, because I can reverse all the feelings. And in a way, the composer tells us himself, maybe, about this character. Me, Rameau, I'm such a good composer, I can show you I can do anything with music. And my genius, my power with music is able to do that. And for all these reasons, this work is fabulous and unique.
Jennifer Smith as Folly with a show-stopping parody of a coloratura aria. Well, we now hear a solemn hymn-like song. Marriage, love doth summon you. Jupiter prepares for yet another union. It's almost as if they're walking down the aisle already. Plater is ecstatic, never questioning for a moment why the handsome king of the gods could possibly want to marry a frog. And she can only utter a few strange noises. Bon, bon, bon.
Amen.
course, as we reach the wedding itself, the climax of the opera, we know that Jupiter has no intention of going through with it. And there's much comedy to be had as he tries to delay saying his vows, while Platy, of course, is keen to get on. And to prolong the suspense, Rameau now introduces a long and colourful dance, the chaconne.
Thank you.
Chaconne, the wedding dance performed by Les Musiciens du Louvre, directed by Mark Minkowski. And my thanks to him also for his comments about the work throughout the programme. Well, our final excerpt takes us to the end of the opera. It's the mock wedding, and Jupiter is getting increasingly anxious. The moment has come to end all this pretense, he whispers nervously to Mercury, but Juno is not here. Finally, and much to his relief, Juno appears, ablaze with anger. "Stop, you ungrateful wretch," she screams, tearing off Platé's wedding veil. And what a face she sees. Of course, now she understands the joke. "How great is my astonishment, how great is my embarrassment," she says. Juno has been cured of her jealousy. She and Jupiter agree to bind themselves together forever, and the gods ascend to heaven. And poor, humiliated Platé? Well, she's back to her pond.
The operas of Rameau are probably the quintessential repertoire of French opera, together with Berlioz and Debussy and Ravel repertoire. They are written by a genius whose language is quite near Bach's scientific use of harmony. I would say even mathematical use of harmony. And all this science is used to serve the most deep expression, the most dancing feeling ever written in any opera. There is so much imagination and so much crazy use of harmony and rhythm that you feel, well, this is so strong, this talks to me. Even if I am listening this 3 centuries, even 4, 5, 6, 10 centuries later, even if this one day travels to planet Mars.
Cette crainte, vous qui ne doutez point du pouvoir de vos yeux.
Je songe à votre ancienne épouse.
Et quoi qu'on a pris en dévou.
Elle est, à ce qu'on dit, jaloux.
Nous laisserons agir son puissant courroux. Pour célébrer un peu si légitime.
Thank you. misère, ma grotte profonde que je vous porterai, que je vous lancerai. Je porterai, je lancerai, je porterai, je lancerai, je lancerai.
Furious frog nymph Platé, punished by the gods for her conceit and arrogance, returns to her home in the swamp. The final moments from Jean-Philippe Rameau's comic opera Platé, with Gilles Ragon in the title role, and Les Musiciens du Louvre, conducted by Mark Minkowski. Today's early music show was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced by Chris Wines.
World Roots is 10 years old this year, and it's been quite a journey. In studio sessions, concert recordings, and location features, we've covered pretty much the whole world of music, including performances from major international figures like Ravi Shankar and Salif Keita. But especially in our travels for the programme, we've also encountered rich musical traditions that have never been heard outside their own locality. Well, to celebrate, we've organised a party at the BBC's Maida Vale studios and invited not only listeners, friends and contributors, but also some extraordinary musicians. That's World Roots with me, Lucy Duran, today on BBC Radio 3 at 3 o'clock.
In other words, an hour from now. Well, now at 2 o'clock, we've a second chance to hear last Monday's Radio 3 lunchtime concert. It's introduced by Susie Klein.
A very warm welcome. The players of the Tokyo Quartet recently celebrated the group's 40th birthday. Today they are here playing live at Wigmore Hall, and they'll be joined by an outstanding soloist, the German clarinetist Sabine Meyer, performing in Mozart's Clarinet Quintet. But before that, the Tokyo Quartet treats us to music by Schubert, his quartet in E-flat major, Deutsch 87. Well, the piece was written early in Schubert's career. Much of his childhood, his adolescence, spent as a choir boy in the Royal City College in Vienna, where he was taught by no less than Antonio Salieri. But while there, Schubert faced almost constant pressure from his father to leave college and train as a schoolteacher. In the end, the young composer did just as his father requested, but he still continued to have lessons with Salieri. Given that Schubert was just 16 when he wrote the piece we're about to hear, one supposes that Salieri must have been a rather fine teacher and certainly a great supporter of the young Schubert's evident talent. So here to perform Schubert's string quartet in E-flat major, Deutsch 87, it's the Tokyo Quartet.